Hello, and welcome to the show. My name is Donovan Morgan Grant, and I am joined by Mr. Harrison Chute.
Hello.
And this is Questions We Don't Have Answers. The two of us have been podcasting for some years now. Harry's been analyzing sci-fi on a social-political scale, and I've done shows on superhero comic books and superhero comic book media. So we've been in the podcasting game for a while, but thought we'd like to up our ante and try to talk about things that really matter. Things that people try to talk about but tend not to. Sociology, society, culture, race.
We need food.
So the purposes of this podcast is to have as honest and uncompromising a discussion as humanly possible. So hopefully this podcast will
explode
the world.
Broaden your mindset and give way to critical thinking, because critical thinking is where it all begins. So sit back, enjoy, and give us your thoughts once you hear our takes on the subject matters of today.
We want prohibition! We want prohibition!
You can't seriously want to ban alcohol. It tastes great, makes women appear more attractive, and makes a person virtually invulnerable to criticism.
What kind of an example are we setting?
Ladies, please. All our founding fathers, astronauts, and World Series heroes have been either drunk or on cocaine.
Wait. Looky here. Seems there's been a prohibition law on the books in Springfield for 200 years. It's just never been enforced.
Well, get out of here, old clerk guy.
There's also a law requiring ducks to wear long pants.
Wait a minute. Let me see that. Well, I'll be darned. Long pants.
Read the other one, the non-duck one.
And spirituous beverages are hereby prohibited under penalty of catapult.
So a few weeks ago, I met up with somebody online, and this person was touring the South. She was from Luxembourg, basically Europe. And so she's been kind of traveling around America. This is the first time she'd been visiting America. And she'd been coming down to Tennessee. She had just come from Memphis. And we were on some of the social medias. And she says, okay, I'm looking for somebody to just kind of talk to and hang around for a day in Nashville. And I was like, all right, I'll do it, as long as you won't kill me. So the next day, when she spared my life, we kind of were talking a lot. And we ended up talking a lot about what we're talking about this show, being politics, her being part of the planet that was very surprised by the 2016 election. But one thing she brought up, because we ended up going for ice cream, is that she was very, very confused as to why America seemed to be so willfully ignorant on public health. She was saying that, like, one of the first things she noticed about America was that people were very polite. Like, you know, in public places of service, and generally people would kind of greet you and be happy and pleasant, which isn't the case, apparently, in her part of Europe. But physically, people were very, you know, out of shape or obese. And it got to the point where she did not even know what walkers were. She had seen an older person with a walker and, like, did not know what that contraption was.
Wow.
And we were talking, and this is a very, like, just kind of solid, you know, very straightforward, some might say slim, average-built woman. And she said that, like, you know, in her country, she might even be seen as somewhat slightly a couple of pounds, you know, overweight or whatever. But, like, in America, she would be seen as slim. And just the basic, you know, the average build of people. Let's say, you know, somebody who has the build of a Donald Trump, or somebody who has the build of a Kenan Thompson or whatever, how that's irregular. And as we were driving across downtown Nashville, which is the kind of honky-tonk tourist area of the city, where you see, like, Elvis statues and all these sort of, like, country bar, karaoke places, where you see many, many people kind of cross the street, like it's New York. You do see a lot of people who are just, you know, very sweaty, very big, very, you know, not Hollywood pleasant, I suppose. And this is an interesting talking point, because she said that, like, in terms of portion sizes and the quality of food that is given to people in Luxembourg, or people in France, or people in London, it's immediate that she notices that the quality of food is much different and much worse in America. She talked about how the basic education was in terms of how what you would put in your bodies when you're kind of growing up, and that places like McDonald's or Burger King were certainly in Europe, but they did not have fast food, or drive-throughs. It was a place that you would go inside to eat, and generally, at least from what I remember her telling me, it was kind of seen as a stigma. Like he had nothing else to eat, so you could go to a fast food place. Whereas in America, it's kind of seen as
a night out.
Yeah, exactly. And this was, I thought this was a very interesting conversation because this brought to mind a law that I remember there was an episode of The Daily Show a couple of years ago where there was talk of a law, a ban in sodas being sold that were over 16 ounces. And a 16-ounce soda is basically, generally, in a lot of fast food joints, seen as a small size. If you're working for Starbucks, it's a medium size or a grande size. But you have like the mega gulp or the big gulps or whatever, which go to like anywhere between 32 and I think over 50 sizes. It's pretty insane. And I've known for a while that like some countries like Japan have it to where their sizes are like their large is like a small for Americans.
Yes.
And just all that kind of stuff. And I know this goes in tandem with like America being the fattest country in the world, you know, heart disease and obesity and diabetes being a leading cause of death in America. And so this brought to mind that like, honestly, if there were, no, I should go back to like the New York law. If there were laws that prohibit, the selling of such, you know, bad foods for you, how would they be received? Because there was a pretty big backlash against that soda ban in New York. And in fact, I think it actually did kind of cross the New York Food and Health and Services regulations in terms of serving size or whatever. I think it actually did. It was found that, like, that was, I don't want to say unconstitutional, but, like, you know, that law was basically reversed. It did not stick. But we have a history of laws in America which kind of talk about or which kind of get into public health. You think of the Prohibition era between 1920 and 1933. You think of smoking bans, which have become more popular throughout the 20th and 21st century. And you think of the constant discussion of healthcare. And so I think that like it's an interesting conversation. How far should government encourage health or inhibit the freedom to choose what you put in your body? You know, we have more education about nutritional facts. We have more education about the effects of smoking and the effects of drinking. But it's still our legal right to do whatever, you know, unless we, you know, indulge in illegal drugs. But I'm wondering, is there more we can do to become a healthier country in terms of what we put in our bodies? And, or essentially, and this is kind of part of the healthcare debate, can we model ourselves after some European countries' examples? And not go crazy on bad foods, or does that get into crossing the lines of certain freedoms that we've that have defined us as a country? So I thought that's the topic for tonight. Government's either interference or public health, food for thought, as it were.
Cool.
Yeah, I tried that out on somebody earlier today when I was asking that question. But my name is Donovan Morgan Grant, and I am joined by Mr. Harrison Chute. And Harry, what are your opening thoughts on topics such as this?
Well, this is an interesting one, kind of a left turn off the last few episodes, probably. Not quite as angry this time, either of us, or intense, although we could certainly get there. Just put a little sugar in us, or caffeine, perhaps. Some Monster. But yeah, I mean, I think it's related to a number of things and is interesting in itself. Of course, we have the idea of, as you mentioned, the limits of intervention upon our private lives by the government and the nature of freedoms and how we define those and how sometimes we find that maybe they're arbitrary or that they are in service of something else, or that we don't need them or that we need them and they don't exist or something. Anything to sort of get us thinking critically or rather creatively about our freedoms, about the Constitution, that's always a good thing. The comparison between America and Europe, I mean, that is such a big, interesting thing that I think really relates to the kind of the problem with the U.S. in this regard, which is that It's not going to take legislation to fix a problem like obesity. It's going to take a cultural shift, which we can talk about. Like, what, you know, there's something about the way that Europe was developed as a nation culturally, as opposed to the way the United States was, that just makes it so that we just think that it's right or proper, or we don't think about it at all. Rather, we're just not trained to think about the sugar that goes into our body. And when we are, it's usually about, you know, looking good for spring or whatever. What are people talking about?
Summer bodies.
Exactly. Which is its own thing. Like that. How is it that efforts or, you know, ideas about weight loss become sort of toxic and, you know, patriarchal in many regards? So, yeah, this is an interesting one. And I'm interested to see where it goes.
Yeah, something that, like, you know, you and I have talked about in the past, you know, kind of our post, you know, sort of cool down recording discussions, you know, when we're talking about, when we're BSing about our lives, is that, you know, how we take to our diet, you know, because we're both grown ass men. And the older we get, the more we become aware of kind of what we put in our bodies. Whereas before, I wasn't really. I mean, I kind of was in college, but like, more toward terms of, you know, sort of getting stronger and healthier rather than just worrying about being negligent. One thing we can kind of start off with is a kind of our own personal sort of awareness of this. Like, growing up, I think that, like, you and I come both from the generation where there was a lot of anti-smoking ads for children. Like, you know, you learn, you know, never to smoke a cigarette. And that goes back to, like, the 70s. Like, you can actually find Superman ads in the 70s where Superman fights the villain Nick O'Teen, who is not from the comics, but you know, just like, don't smoke, and like, there's a lot of cartoons where kids are not supposed to smoke, and how drinking isn't cool for teenagers. There's a lot of, you know, sort of like, you know, moral health initiatives taken to that. And as an adult, you can choose to ignore that kind of stuff. But like, how did you sort of manifest your own awareness of health when you were young? Did those ads sort of impact how you viewed yourself as an adult, which you kind of put in your body? And that, and how does that relate? Not in terms of, like, you know, depressants or narcotics or whatever, but food, exactly. Like, how did that, you know, was there any sort of consideration as to your diet when you were younger, or how have you sort of begun to consider that as you've gotten older?
Wow. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I obviously, you know, as a kid didn't, well, not obviously, but I was fortunate enough not to have had to have prepared my own food for many, many years. Although I did on occasion as I got into my teenage years, but it was kind of a rude awakening, you know, moving out on my own and starting to have to cook for myself, which sucks because I don't know how much I need to buy. Like, that's honestly the biggest part. Like, I would have had to go to the grocery store again today, but I forgot as I was driving home. I was lost in the K-pop, and so I just didn't go to the grocery store. Like, I pulled into my street, and I was like, ah, motherfucker, because that's how I talk to myself. but I already had gone, I think, like, Sunday or Friday. Like, I go to the fucking grocery store twice a week, which is very inefficient, and it's a pain in the ass to get there because left turns in L.A. are the worst thing ever invented. So that's weird. But also, I have an electric stove, so boiling 4 quarts of water takes about an hour. So you better be preparing ground beef and onions and bell peppers at the same time, or watching Netflix or something. Like, it's such a pain in the butt. So in terms of how that relates to my health, you know, I just never, ever had to worry about it as a kid. I was only ever concerned about how cereal tastes bad because I ate it every day of my life. I don't know why. I hate breakfast foods, so that's cereal. This podcast is I'm sabotaging your podcast with my boring, my inability to tell anecdotes about my life. I apologize. health. I had a buddy who was very concerned about this throughout. Like, he's a very A-type go-getter. He's very much like a Josh Chan on Craziest Girlfriend, just because he's Filipino and in shape. And he was always talking about calories and stuff, and saying words that I still don't really understand, and numbers and stuff. Like, I've never really done the work of, like, looked into nutrition or anything like that, or, like, decided
macrobiotics or whatever.
I don't even know what is that from Mass Effect. I don't even know what you're talking about.
Because
you know, I mean, because I've thought about it. Like, I should do that. I should like sit down and think, like, oh, this is what I should make every day, or rather, every week, for myself for the four meals as you eat as an American every day. Because also, like, I want to stop eating meat because that bothers me as well. So I need to think about that, but or I'm just going to keep eating the fucking microwave chicken burgers every day. Not every day, but, you know, pretty damn close. But supplementing it with those microwave veggie burgers so that I feel not as awful as I usually do. So for long story short, my story and my romance story with health consciousness has been sort of like I don't know. It hasn't begun yet. It's like Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind or something. It's just not not healthy. It's not. It's very toxic. It makes me think, like, what you were saying about, like, you know, anti-drug ads or something like that. And this is just a note to stash away for later. It's like I wonder, in terms of the culture, if anti-drug stuff kind of contributes to the proliferation a little bit, or at least the culture of drugs and alcohol and bad decisions in terms of health being considered cool. I wonder about that, if that's even something to consider. But Donovan, for you, before we get into any of that stuff, what is your story with the pyramid?
Well, I mean, As you were, yeah, I didn't really think about it too much, and I kind of had a, for lack of a better word, like kind of a fat period when I was younger. Like, when I was like a tween, like pretty much, like the back half of like my fifth grade year and the front first half of my sixth grade year before I hit puberty, I had gained some weight, and you can see me, I look heavier than I had ever had been, because when I was a kid, I was pretty much kind of an average kid with a 90s haircut, as you might imagine. And then, like, yeah, when I was like a, in, like, I guess middle school, I just I don't even remember how it happened. I just was just heavier than ever, and I imagine, don't know how much I weighed, but you can tell I was just kind of a heavy kid. And then once I hit puberty, like when I was like 12 or 13, I think the weight just kind of just went away, and I'm kind of lanky. And when I was in high school and I was kind of, you know, getting into exercising, that's when I actually started considering cooking for myself and finding out which foods would have the most protein and stuff. I remember I would wake up early and cook myself eggs in the dark. At one point, I, instead of, you know, meat tenderizer, I actually put in cinnamon into my scrambled eggs.
Delicious.
Like, this tastes oddly sweet. Oh, what have I done? But I got more and more aware of that in college, because in college I could actually absolutely control what I put in my body. So, you know, how much I would put in my body, how much water I would drink, you know, what type of foods I would get, as much like fat-free or low-fat peanut butter, which I actually think tastes genuinely better. I've always kind of grown up eating wheat bread. I switched to kind of low-fat milk or tried skim milk. For a while, I would actually eat or drink...
Don't say it.
Almond milk.
No!
And I did that for a while. I would even put it into my Honey Nut Cheerios, and I got sick of that after like a year or so.
Cheerios bad.
Yeah, I don't care for it. But, like, yeah, in college, I was probably in the best shape of my life by the time I graduated college. Like, I was looking pretty fit. I exercised regularly. We had a gym, you know, on campus. And I would just be eating, like, Greek yogurt and drinking water, like, all the time, like, in between classes and stuff. And eating sushi. my diet wasn't, like, you know, peerless, but I think I was active enough where it didn't have a major impact. And the last, I would say probably between, I think since the end of 2015, I've been worse. My diet's been much crappier. We've been eating out a lot just because, like, you know, we don't have time to cook anymore. Most of us work. And, I still drink water more than anything else, but, like, so I'm not in terrible shape, but I'm less defined. So I try to, like, stay active. And, I'll be seeing Stella again soon in a couple of months, and, like, we both signed up for a 5K, which is about three miles, I guess, which I can do, because I remember when I was active, I could run 3 miles on the treadmill, so that's doable for me. But I mean, I think, yeah, by the time I was a teenager, I was aware of what kind of foods had what. And if I am going to eat something, like, I don't eat candy or eat ice cream much at all. I don't really like sweets. If I do it, it'll be, like, once in a while, like very rarely. I do go to Burger King, like, on Fridays. Just it's kind of sort of a tradition for myself. But I try not to have burgers, like, every day.
That's hard, dude.
Well, yeah, I try to figure out alternatives. Like, I have been considering a vegetarian diet just to kind of see how that would affect my body, but I can't go a day without eating meat. I just need meat in some form. But I remember driving home today, I was actually looking some of the stuff up on my break at work, and there was a YouTube ad for Sonic. And I was like, wow, that looks really, really, really good. That looks really delicious. And I very...
Get out of here, Kimmy Schmidt. Damn it.
I know. Like, I very nearly went over there, but, like, the traffic was bad. I was like, screw this. I'll just go home and make some tuna, which was a better option. And it saved money. But, yeah, my diet has been... it can always be improved. I have a cousin who I think has actually written some things on like, vegan diets. She's super into vegetarian diets, and she looks great. Like, she looks... She kind of looks immortal because of the diet that she has, and she's not like
a regular Keanu Reeves.
Yeah. And she's not like a yoga master or whatever, but she just eats very healthy and is very extremely knowledgeable about that. And you know, I was never going to smoke. I've never smoked. My parents didn't smoke, although my father's mother, my grandmother, has been smoking for like most of her 96 years, and she's doing fine.
Nice.
And I never got into drinking. Like, I never really was interested in that. I've always kind of understood it to be poison, and like, I guess that was never something that I cared to be about. Whereas the high school I went to is nicknamed Father Rehab because everyone got drunk over the weekends. And yeah, I remember like when I first went to Comic-Con with Stella and Josh, in our group of five, we were the three that didn't drink because I guess we were too nerdy or whatever, but like, that's just never been something that like, it's even more so than like a moral thing. It's just like, I've never really been interested in, so I'll just have something either fruity or water based. Like, did you have any pressure to smoke or drink when you were in high school?
Absolutely not. Which is, again, another fortunate thing, I think.
Yeah. So I found that to be pretty, very, all these television shows and specials, like, oh, you're being pressured. No one really pressured me to do anything. Like, people have offered me drugs or alcohol, and I would say, no, thank you. And they don't like bully me into doing it.
Pussy.
Yeah, they're like, okay, whatever. So yeah, like, it's been. I think that one thing that I brought up, because I've asked a lot of people around my circle this question about, you know, how much should government regulate healthy options for foods and stuff. And I think that, like, one thing that a couple of people have said is like, they should make education more rampant. Because, and it has been. I think that, like, you know, knowing precisely what I'm putting into my body has been a factor. Like bacon, for one thing, is pretty unhealthy for you, even though it's a source of protein. So, even though I do enjoy bacon, not on my burger, that's kind of gross, but, you know, breakfast sandwiches and stuff, I am aware, okay, can I... If I have this during the day, can I have other options that won't compound on this, or will this ruin my day or whatever? And I've been a lot more sort of like cognizant of the effects of certain foods. Like, if I have fried foods for breakfast, I will be drowsy and low energy like for the rest of the day. So I try not to do that. If I have fried foods in general, those don't tend to have positive effects on me. Last night I was finishing like half of a cheesecake my mom got for me over the weekend, and my face felt like planet Krypton. Like, it was just I could feel it exploding all over the place, and I went to bed early because of that.
Wow.
So, like, I feel that, like, I'm actually paying attention more to my body in terms of how am I feeling. Do I feel energized? I try to have a pretty good breakfast. I try to eat oatmeal every day. I try to have, like, healthy fruits like watermelon or bananas or yogurt, always water, green tea. And that stuff, you know, I think when I was younger, it's like, oh, that stuff's not tasty or whatever. I used to eat cereal often too, but like, I don't know. I mean, I think my palate has matured. But whilst I'm still, you know, again, like, yeah, I would not say that I'm a mindful diet because, you know, if I'm lazy, I'll say, okay, well, let me get a cookie for lunch or something like that if I'm at work. But generally, even if I choose wrong or bad choices, I'm kind of aware of it. But, you know, the question goes back to, if the government regulated health options, like instead of cookies or whichever as a snack option for kids or whatever, it was always fruit, or fruit was always the only option at places of business for just snacks. I don't know that I would be opposed to that. And I don't know really of places that are like that, but like if that's the conversation we're having, then I don't really mind it. But that's because I feel that like I'm already on the track to think healthy, and I'm already of a mind to be aware of how my body would react to, you know, a regularity of bad foods.
Mm-hmm. And you know, I think this is the point that we would kind of arrive upon, but of course it is the better solution as a counteract to legislation is to develop a sense of self-control, because of course you have that famous story about the guy chronicled in the Fast Food Nation or Super Size Me who ate a Big Mac every day and he was fine. Like, yeah, you can do that, of course, but who goes to a fast food restaurant and orders like something sensible? You know, they have their like weird green options. But the problem with me was that whenever I would go to even like McDonald's, I would get three sandwiches and French fries and maybe one of those apple pie things. And I'm not like a big dude or anything. Like, I'm always actually like my doctor was always a little concerned about me because I could not develop fat. So I was always underweight. I'm not trying to like do a weird, I don't know, Jenna from 30 Rock. I just, that was a thing.
Mr. Chute, you have no ass.
Yeah. And I think that probably, I think it's just the metabolism probably. I just process things fast, which is actually awful in terms of the frequency with which I interact with bathrooms on a daily basis. But, but you know, when I go to McDonald's, I get like way too much and I always would feel awful afterwards. Like, you know, like I would be eating one of those freaking Crunchwrap Supremes at Taco Bell, of which I don't think there's ever been a more American invention than the Crunchwrap Supreme at Taco Bell. But I'd eat one of those things and have another burrito there. And I'd be like, I don't need to eat the burrito. And of course I would eat it because what am I going to do? Put it in the fridge? It's going to be like, you know, a creature the next morning. It's going to be like a graboid out of my fridge. So I'll just eat it now and feel awful. And I would always feel really awful and say never again. After any fast food discrepancy, I would say never, never. And then, of course, I would do that. There was a period of like, I want to say 2 years into my time in Los Angeles. Because I mean, I would only ever get fast food when I was a kid, when my younger sister wanted fast food, and we were all getting fast food. I would never be like, yeah, let's do that. Just because I don't know, maybe I was more health conscious back then. But once I was on my own, I was like, oh, sure, fast food, it's on the way. And so I would be like, all right, this is going to be like a special thing. Like, I'm not going to do this every day. It'll be like at least once a month, hopefully twice a month. And for a couple of years, like that was actually kind of hard to maintain. Cause I would think about it sometimes. I'd be like, oh, you know what would be really great tonight? Like I would see like a TV show with a hamburger on it and be like, oh man, now it's in my head. I've been burger-cepted. And that would be like all I can think about. But now, like, it's actually been a while that I haven't had a fast food hamburger, and I don't have the same kind of craving, and I think that that's like, you know, like it's possible, guys, to break free of our evil corporate overlords. But you know, in principle, like the ability to develop that sort of self-control, like whatever that looks like for any individual. And it's not obviously going to look the same because we all have different vices and different needs and feelings of like what we deserve, or because even, but that was always part of it too.
Treat yourself.
Exactly. So that's going to be different, but I think that's important too. And then also I think it comes from, or rather self-control also comes from, as you were mentioning, like, how you came up and what your parents kind of passed on to you. As you said, like they didn't drink or smoke or do anything like that. And for my parents, like specifically for like soda and sugary drinks, like soda was a weekend thing and that was it. Uh-huh. And that pissed me off so much because I love orange soda so much. I'm like, was it Kenan and Kel? Like that was their thing.
Oh yeah.
Yep. That was just my favorite thing in the world. But I think that was good. Like it kind of, it made me think of soda as this thing that needed to be regulated, because that's just how it always was. And the thought of drinking soda on the weekday was like, well, why would you do that? It was almost like a religious thing. Like, oh, don't eat pork on Sunday, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that is kind of interesting now that I think about it. But yeah, you kind of have to find your like system, I think, maybe. And we could talk about that, like developing a sort of a pipeline for healthy decisions, of course.
Yeah, have you ever felt the need, like when you became of age, like when you were in college and you could do whatever, to say, I'm going to have candy every day, man, and I'm going to have a cupcake for breakfast and, like, you know, pizza for lunch or whatever. Like, I think by the time you're 18 or 20 or whatever, you know that that's stupid. But, like,
yes.
Have you ever, like, just done that just to do it?
I can't say I have, because I think similar with you, like I never had any peer pressure, and I think it was just because my friends were all so lame like I was. And so like, but we were the kind of kids who like would go to the school dance to make fun of the kids who were dancing. Like that's the kind of lame we were. Like we didn't know we were lame. We thought we were better than everybody else.
You were Zendaya from Spider-Man Homecoming.
Yeah, exactly. And exactly as charismatic and attractive. She just turned 22. I shouldn't say that. But we had our own song that was like, or you know, it was kind of just like an in-joke. It would be like, you know, no parents, ice cream for breakfast, pizza for breakfast. And that was all the sort of illegal things that we could think of was just ice cream for breakfast and pizza for breakfast. Like that was, so that was our rejection of that sort of rebellion. We just never had that instinct. And I think it was also just because I never had a sweet tooth either when I was a kid. I think as an adult it started to come in a little bit. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I never liked candy. I liked ice cream and like Jell-O, which is interesting, but never like cookies. And I still don't really like cookies because they're so dry. But cake was something that I only liked later on. And weirdly, pie was something that I always loved, especially like weird old people pie, like key lime and lemon meringue. I don't know why that is.
Yeah, you know, I'm the opposite of that because like I can eat that kind of stuff, but like pie and cake are the ones I'm not really. I've probably had like pie like less than 20 or maybe even 10 times in my life.
And, I'm reporting like, you.
And it's always going in this way. And like and cake like birthday cake or whatever. I like ice cream cake, but like I find cake too dry. And just, I find it to be incredibly sweet. Like, even as I was younger, I was like, this is sweet as hell.
Like, I don't like frosting, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, I like it with ice cream, but, like, I can't do the regular thing. It's just too much. But that's the thing. I think that, like, knowing your limits or knowing kind of like what you're attuned to or being aware of that is one thing. Like, Comic-Con, as you might imagine, like, the concessions are just aggressively insidious. I mean, they're probably as bad, if not, maybe even worse than like your average sort of like, you know, fair or sort of, you know, kind of attraction place. Because they have, you know, the hot dogs and the corn dogs and the oversized pretzels and all that kind of stuff. They do offer like water and apples and bananas, which were totally, I mean, those were my options for like really breakfast this past year. And in fact, I ended up losing weight this year at Comic-Con because we would go like no joke, like 12 hours without eating. Running around through the crowds and kind of trying to catch these press events that like we would go to like pizza places or whatever by the end, but like there was so much physical activity ironically at Comic-Con that like I would know better than to get a hot dog or something because I would feel like crap while I had to cross very, very long stretches of pathway to get to the next place. Those are options given to us. So, like, you know, that's something. I wonder, because the healthcare argument to me, I find to be kind of coming, bumping into this, where it's like, well, people should make more healthier choices so they won't, you know, need universal government regulated healthcare or whatever. If the option is there, people should take that option. But I think that, like, research has shown and evidence and, you know, history that Americans. We're at a point where it's a crisis. It's an epidemic. Like people are a leading cause of death in America is heart disease. So the options are not being taken upon. And I think that's where I'm thinking. It's like, you know, should this be some less of an option and more of the only choice essentially, just so you can, because I mean, people aren't going to, like, you know, start murdering if there's a, you know, like, or I don't know if organized crime is going to happen for, like, sweets or stuff. Like,
it didn't. I would love that.
Prohibition. That feels like an episode of some kind.
Yes.
Of cartoon. You know, it's not going to be, like, you know, bootlegging Pokemon cards like it was in my school, so. I don't know, do you think that, like, a line would be crossed if, okay, we're removing the, like when Michelle Obama started the sort of, you know, what was it, Get Start or Start Right initiative or whichever, encouraging healthy foods, and Republicans said she's the devil, because of course they did. Mm-hmm. Like, if they did legitimately remove, like burgers and fries from, you know, cafeterias in schools and high schools, and it only have healthy options, what would be the downside of that? Is there a line that's being crossed, honestly?
Yeah, I'd be pissed off, honestly. Not in terms of, like, high schools, because I don't attend high school anymore. Haven't for many years, in fact. But if that was no longer an option, like, I there is some simpatico there. Like, and I think that's just, like, this is completely me as an American speaking. Because, yeah, like, that's just – it's like it's our God-given right, you know? As Americans who were created from this soil 2,000 years ago by the touch of Jesus.
Easy now, killer.
But, you know, I can kind of understand – well, certainly I understand academically why Michelle Obama's initiative was unpopular. Of course, it wasn't just because of what it was. Obviously, it had a powerful black woman attached to it. So that's, like, you know, I can't even imagine anything like that.
We can't
just
be having that.
We can't. I mean, it's our God-given right as Americans.
2000 years ago. That's the thing. Yeah, that's the thing that I don't ignore either. It's like, it's damn it, if I want to indulge on a 52-ounce soda, and this is just, I was not in cafeterias, but generally speaking, and a 100 fries or whatever, why can't I do that? And sure, yeah, there's a sense of, like I was in the cafe at Barnes & Noble today, and there was a woman who was, you know, having this sort of, you know, vocal inner battle about, you know, well, this is awfully a lot of carbonations, but whatever, I'm treating myself, I'm going to get the large size. And that's fine. I mean, she didn't look like she was, you know, going to die tomorrow or whatever from her eating choices, but, like, that's so as an option for health, you know, and if you're a person who resembles a person on these fast food commercials who is all bright smiles and, you know, positive energy while you're eating this crappy food, I mean, whatever. But it's one of those things where it's like, you know, like, oh, it's the new bacon burger with double bacon or whatever, and the dripping thing, and, you know, you have people just kind of even some of the stuff has been, I believe, research has been shown that it's kind of addictive.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, like, that to me is, like, I don't know. That's another part of me kind of wondering. Like, what do you think about that?
That's absolutely, like, if you want to reduce American obesity, there are other avenues to pursue, of course, by perhaps attacking big corporations, because there's just so much money there. In terms of their marketing and their ability to manufacture the chemicals that go into the Big Mac and the Dunkin' Donuts donuts that, or, you know, even Coca-Cola, like the fact that Coca-Cola leaves you thirsty somehow. It's like it's a drink. Like, yeah. It's the most American drink possible that makes you
have cocaine in it.
Oh, my God. Really?
Oh, yeah. Coca-Cola literally had cocaine in it in the beginning.
Oh, my gosh. I believe it. and, like, the moment I realized how powerful, you know, big food really was when I was a kid and I heard that if you're an employee at Coca-Cola, you couldn't be seen drinking a Pepsi. And immediately I was like, what do they got, fucking, like, narco ninjas in the corners of the every part of their lives? Like, hey, like, that's just crazy to me. And so, like, yeah, like, that's one avenue. And another one is again, like, in terms of that culture – in terms of self-control, I just think that we have to kind of take a closer look at how Americans interact with their food, because we have a different kind of food culture than all around the world. Like, as Graciela points out on Friends from the Internet, a podcast, like, we don't really have culinary traditions like places in Europe or Asia or anything like that. We have, like, you know, down south, there's, like, Southern-style cooking and things like that. But, you know, like, what's, like, New England cooking? It's just fucking, like, things that come out of the ocean. Like, that's not – what is – that's nothing. But on the other hand, so what does food kind of mean to us? And in terms of – but I think it does have a meaning, and I like to identify it, because when you think about the prohibition of types of food, I also think about, like, how we try to get people to drive safely. Part of that, of course, is drunk driving, but another part is just seatbelts. And as a kid, like,
now.
Oh yeah, like Massachusetts is always like click it or ticket, like that kind of thing. And my mom was like very adamant about like always put on your seatbelt, and so like that was just a thing that was always in my head. And so on occasion you'd have a badass who wouldn't put on their seatbelt, and you'd just be like, hey, can you put on your seatbelt? Like there was a sense of rebelling against that. That putting on your seatbelt was uncool. But I think eventually it was just like, well, of course I'm just going to do this quick thing, because it's like I don't care about it as much as I do, for example, my Big Mac hamburger. Like we just have a different fundamental relationship to that than the other thing. And so part of it is like if it's easy for us. But the only reason why putting on a seatbelt would be hard is just because it is a law. That's your foundation for food prohibition. And then on top of that, you also have, food is just so good. It's so good. We don't even know why it's good. It drives us insane because it's so good in America. And it's probably not even like we just think it is. And because we just have all these places and brands and shit. That's what
I was talking to, the woman about food and stuff. Yeah, she was mentioning that like just on a quality level, the food is so bad in America.
Nice.
It's like, what is this? Which is funny. Like it's like the quality, just the quality of the average kinds of food, not just, you know, fine dining or cuisines or whatever. So much worse than like France. And you know, that's one thing. I mean, I personally find, Burger King to be quite delicious. I found that a lot of my friends don't think so. I remember getting a Facebook argument with some friends that like their Burger King's fries were crap, and I was like, wow, I didn't know that. I had already friends so many communists on this website. But like, I mean, generally, there is that thing where it's like when I'm buying food, I know it's bad for me, but like it's like I'm not thinking about it. It's like, but it tastes so good, you know, It is so good for me, or good to me, really. There's a kind of, you know, I don't know if it's dopamine that hits your brain when you taste fast food, but like there's a sense of, you know, like when I was in college, like on Fridays, okay, I was at the end of a long week of either writing essays or, you know, working and failing on some sort of art project. I'm going to drive out and get some Burger King, come back to my dorm room and eat it and enjoy the fact that I did that. There is a psychological effect there. Yep. I think, you know, not everyone's like that. So like, you know, it can be more regulated as something else, or people just say, well, I don't have the energy to cook, or I don't have the ingredients to cook at home. There can be reasons to do that, you know, that to spend money and to do all that kind of stuff. Which part, you know, what is the line between, you know, personal freedom and seduction from the food industry, seduction from, you know, these sort of corporations that kind of feed and profit off of human misery long term? Because there is tacit knowledge of what they're doing, you know, the fact that, like, you know, the powdered donuts at Dunkin' Donuts aren't sugar, it's chemicals.
That was great.
I don't know if there's a way to figure out how to separate, like, you know, long-term widespread brainwashing versus, you know, I choose to do this because I want to, because I'm enjoying my right to do this. Because you really can't talk people out of doing that, but I don't know. It's like, how valuable is that person? How valuable is a life? And how valuable is their productivity towards another corporation that, you know, that thrives upon human misery? I'm fully aware how difficult this is as sort of a topic that kind of branches into several different ideas. But this episode's not over yet, so what do you think?
Well, I think we also have to consider the economic, or rather the socioeconomic factor, because one of the things that was mentioned in this Wikipedia article, which says sugary drinks portion cap rule, was that the quote-unquote soda ban that was going on in New York that was set to be put into effect on March 2013, was opposed by PepsiCo, and their argument was that this would affect lower income families in a negative way. And for sure, like there in America, there is definitely this thought about eating healthy is kind of elitist. You know, just whole foods. You know, like those two words mean a lot. Mm-hmm. That's the place you go to if you have a lot of money and you can spend on. God, I don't know what if it was SNL or something who did like the cucumbers in water. Or no, that was a real thing. They were selling cucumbers in water or something as like a fitness drink, and they got in trouble for it. Like, yeah, that's weird, like hipster shit. But I guess if you want to, like, anytime one of my Facebook friends points out like eating healthy, she's like, oh, we shop at like Whole Foods and Trader Joe's and Costco, of course. But you have to have a membership, or not Costco,
Sam's
Club probably, yeah. Or maybe Costco. I don't know. God, I knew BJ's back on the East Coast. That was a cool place. But yeah, like you know, would it be more? Would it cost more to go vegetarian or to even just eat sensibly? Like, I don't cook with a lot of ingredients in terms of like herbs and spices. Like, one of my standby recipes is just like this American chop suey that was handed down from not like in a tradition, but it came from my grandparents, and my father also cooked it. But it's basically just like elbow noodles, ground beef, bell peppers, and onions. And that's it. Like, I don't even put salt in it because I just don't have salt. Like, I just don't keep salt in my house. And it's very plain, but I don't mind. And, like, I've thought about trying to experiment with things. And honestly, like, one of the shows that we were captioning at my work in the off-season was The French Chef with Julia Child. I'm Julia Child. And she was – I mean, she was credited as bringing French cuisine, popularizing it in the United States. And obviously France and like Italy are like, you know, those are two European countries that we think of as like that's where good food comes from. And France, like and the recipes she's making are like it's a lot of like, you know, baked goods, and it just takes so much goddamn preparation and like all these weird ingredients that you wouldn't and like utensils that you wouldn't think of. Like, I don't have a rolling pin. It wouldn't be much to get it. But just like once you're in that mode of like, I am going to dedicate a part of my week to food preparation. Like, that is not only money, but it's also time. And like, I could afford to do that, sure. But in a sort of moral sense, or like where I am both like at the nexus of lazy American and also like aspiring writer, like, no, I don't have time for that. I barely have enough time to make my lunches for the week and like prepare a weird dinner of eggs and potato for my dinner that night. And like, I'm fine with it. Like, I don't need, like, the only reason I'm going to change any of that is just to be healthier, because I also don't exercise and I'm probably going to die young, and it's going to be really cool in that way that we immortalize rappers. It's like, oh, Harrison died because he ran a mini marathon in 2012 and never ran again. So that's how he died.
Also, he talked shit.
Yeah. On Michelle Obama.
Oh, man. Well, I mean, when Jen and I were dating, like she had talked about like food preparations, because she was into that, and I was going to give it a go, but like, yeah, there was a lot of me that was like, you know, this doesn't take time and energy, and like I figured that there must be a faster, easier, maybe even sleazier way to do this.
Sorry, be on the underpass 6 o'clock.
I can't tell you who I am, but. Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah, food preparation, kind of, or just kind of knowing what you're going to be eating. Like, I eat the same thing every day, and it is like, you know, kind of five different things. But I enjoy eating those, and they don't take forever for me to make. You know, just pop out the plates, just pop out, you know, whatever. Oatmeal takes 30 seconds, which isn't like, you know, the greatest oatmeal ever, but it's oatmeal. Whatever. I mean, do you remember? Honestly, I mean, because you're from Massachusetts, restaurants where there were smoking and non-smoking sections. Do you remember that?
I think that was probably a factor when I was a kid, but certainly not. I don't remember actually seeing it.
Like Cracker Barrel in Nashville, it's a pretty anywhere in the South, it's a pretty common restaurant establishment. It's a Southern restaurant, and it's really cool. I very much remember when we first moved to Nashville for the first like several years, there being a smoking area and a non-smoking area. And sometimes if it was crowded, you kind of have to sit near or even in the smoking area.
Oh, no.
And, yeah, it was just the misery of, you know, tasting your curly fries or whatever. No, they don't have curly fries, but just whatever. It's tobacco stained. Because all cigarettes look the same until they made Swisher Sweets. But, like, you know, I mean, that there's a smoking ban on that now. There's a smoking ban pretty much countrywide. Unless it's a private place or your home or a private place of business, or a car that's not occupied by small children, like there's pretty much a smoking ban everywhere. And I don't remember the political response to that or, you know, the public opinion behind that. I just remember like that eventually that just happened. And no one seems to be like, you know, fighting. There's no smoker rights. There's no smoker NRA thing going on. It's pretty much established that, like, you know, smoking is, there's no positive side to smoking. I mean, there are no more smoking commercials. You don't see Fred Flintstone hawking cigarettes anymore. Please tell me you know about that.
Oh, yeah, sure.
You know, you don't see people in, honestly, people in television and movies rarely smoke. Like, yeah, if it's a period piece, they'll smoke. But, like, you know, people in modern movies don't smoke anymore. It's just not encouraged as much. And people in real life smoke. But, like, you know, either they'll vape or smoke e-cigarettes. It's generally, you know, there's been a real positive effect in, you know, kind of being aware of smoking because it causes, oh, I don't know, lung disease and birth defects. Why would you want that?
God.
So, like, that's one thing where, like, I guess because smoking had, like, you know, way more consequences than it had positives. You know, I guess it's smaller than me, like, that smooth flavor, as Barnum Noble told me. I guess they switched their brand from cigarettes to cereal. I'm wondering if food can be comparable in that way. And I don't know, because, you know, if you want to gain weight, if you actually want to gain weight, you can, you know, invest in some, you know, McDonald's is pretty inexpensive, I find. You know, if you just can kind of want to treat yourself once a week and only once a week and kind of have a cheat day if you're an athlete, hit up a McDonald's. I mean, I'm not even sure what I'm suggesting exactly. Like, I'm not saying we should abolish fast food. Because I don't believe I'm that extreme, but I'm thinking that the European model for these sorts of things is interesting to be aware of. And I guess at this point, libertarians are like, you know, would kind of kick down the door saying, you know, shut up, you know, you should be able to do whatever you want. But I don't know. I mean, the stats, the obesity stats, which I don't have right now, speak for themselves. And I'm thinking that if there can be a credible comparison between, you know, bad food and part of the food industry and smoking or smoking your alcohol, what would that be? Now, the opposite side of that would be, you know, prohibition and trying to ban alcohol, which didn't work out.
Right.
Whereas, you know, the broad strokes is that, like, it kind of started up from this sort of, you know, it was a combination of taxes and moral groups, you know, religious groups or women's groups or whatever, basically fighting against you know, public drunkenness and how alcoholism affects, you know, people in the home and stuff. And from 1920 to 1933, it was banned, and that led to bootleggers and organized crime and, you know, Hays Code era movies. And it didn't work out. You know, there was a backlash against it, and people would argue that, like, it led to more crime beforehand. So prohibition is generally seen negatively in hindsight, but there has been, I was the argument for it, but it has been a talking point in terms of the positives from it. Like, you know, there was a psoriasis decrease, there was public drunkenness decrease. So, again, I'd have no real argument going forward to, but I think it is an interesting idea in terms of looking at which public health things have been banned and which ones have worked out and which ones have not. The smoking ban a potential model for how food might be regulated in, like, let's say the Star Trek timeline where everything's perfect, or are those foods just made better? Like, can you imagine fast food being done sort of like, you know, tofu and veggie burgers, where the science is down to where it tastes the same but it's not as healthy?
God, we better have food figured out before we get to Star Trek with fucking replicators. Could you imagine? but yeah, I mean.
Clone.
Oh my gosh. but wouldn't it be nice to at least, like, obviously don't abolish fast food just yet, even though I do think that if we were living in a timeline where fast food didn't exist, nobody would be like, I really need a poison sludge to just put in my body right now and just feel awful. Like that wouldn't be a thing that anybody would ask for. And it's I wonder where fast food even came from, like what sort of thoughts put it into development and sort of made it into the monster that it is. But like getting rid of drive-thrus, at least to sort of adhere to the European model, would be great. Like, who wouldn't want that? Like, I don't use the drive-thru. I know you do, but I do not.
You've heard me go through drive-thrus before on the phone.
Yes, we've been on this call, and you've been through going through a drive-thru at Crystal's, getting Crystal fries and sliders.
Dude, they closed that down like last week.
Really? Oh my gosh!
I was getting gas across the street. I was like, "Holy crap, it's gone!" Oh well.
Yeah, it'll just be another Starbucks or something. Because every time I fly from Boston to LA and I land at LAX, I always walk to the in and out, which is like a little over a mile, and I just do it to get clear of the that awful street where cars go through and drop people off. And I'm always like, I'm gonna get an In-N-Out burger. And the drive-thru, like the parking lot and the drive-thru are like indistinguishable, and it is just packed. Like, people are just slammed into the windows. It's like Kaneda in the body of Tetsuo at the end of the year. It is a nightmare. I never walk in, or I think I do once, and I'm like, no, let me just get my Lyft. So that would be great. But in terms of, like, I totally see your thinking in terms of, like, let's parse out how smoking stopped being like a thing and try to apply that to other areas, specifically food. And I say other areas because when I think about, like, I wish I could have at least understood what it felt like to have smoking be ubiquitous in terms of like a cultural thing that just everybody did it.
Well, you watch Mad Men. I'm sure they regulated that.
Well, that's the thing. Like, in Mad Men, like, I never watch a period piece or any TV show where people do smoke, and I don't feel like it's an affectation or like a part of the character. Like, it looks so cool that Don Draper's smoking. The way he's doing it, like, that means something. It's not just like this thing. And like, my second roommate out here, like, was a smoker, and I feel like it was just very inconvenient for him. And like, he would sit on the porch and like talk to his dad or like listen to a sports game on the radio. Like, I don't, like, where did this guy come from? Like, what decade? But he was a pretty cool dude. But like, yeah, he smoked, and I feel like he was kind of a pain in the butt. But like, you know, what would it have been like for smoking to be this thing that you did have lobbies going to Washington for? And of course, that is directly comparable to guns these days, which makes me at once hopeful that guns will be like what cigarettes are now. But also, like, how many years and decades did that take for smoking to stop being a thing? And in terms of what smoking shares with food and with guns, I feel like is that research. But it's just so visceral to have, like, a family member be in the hospital for lung cancer and then die. Like, that happened to me. But I've never had anybody die of a gunshot or obesity. And I feel like that's probably just how it is. You know, school shootings are, or rather mass shootings are so common. But I feel like statistically, like, people, well, I don't even know. Like, I feel like most gun deaths are domestic violence related. So not what hits the headlines. So our personal investment in gun crimes, I feel like, is probably less than it was with smoking. 'Cause it's just like everybody smoked. Whereas, gun culture is sort of, what do you call it, like, stratified in the country. Like, obviously, that's something that happens a lot. It's more popular down south and in red states and shit. At least that's what MSNBC tells me. And then with food, like, yeah, like, what is, like, I feel like there is that research. There are ways to compel people to eat healthier, or at least to not eat the worst things, or even not to eat meat. Like, I remember the line about those Linklater documentaries about fast food was like, I watched that and I saw how the food is made, and I never want to eat fast food again. Whether or not, you know, these high school kids stuck to that is probably debatable, but I feel like that's a start, or like, that's at least like, okay, we can have the conversation. People can be sort of rocked out of the mode that this is just the default. And that's very powerful. Especially when you're thinking about the way people interact with guns. Like, that is just, it's in the fucking Constitution. Like, at least fast food isn't in the Constitution. And I'm not 100% opposed. Maybe it should be.
Funny.
I mean, like, I'm not 100% opposed either to fast food as I am to assault weapons,
right,
or
right,
largely all gun ownership, to be honest with you. Although I can't say that too loudly. but you know, with food, like, yeah, like, I think probably I would even, as an armchair liberal, I would even have to sort of parse out my own feelings on, like, my stance on that, and then sort of go from there. Like, I'm not even sure about that.
Yeah, I, the whole thing with smoking thing, you say, like, you know, in Mad Men, it was more seen as kind of a character rather than just, you know, kind of like the mode of the day. And I think for me, a similar thing would be like Cowboy Bebop, where everybody smokes, but it seems like it's done, because I don't know of any other anime where people smoke as often.
They do weirdly a lot in Standalone Complex. I don't know why. Oh, because they're all cyborgs. They don't have lungs.
They might as well burn it out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I remember, like there's a shot in Robotech/Macross where, like, Roy Fulker's, like, putting out a cigarette, and that's, like, the only time you see him do it. That's kind of interesting. Like, that seems like something you'd scared it would do. But generally, like that seems like, yeah, a character-by-character kind of basics kind of thing. So, like, and actually, Bulma smokes in one shot in Dragon Ball, which is very strange and random.
Isn't it, like, censored a lot of the times?
Yeah, well, it depends on the actually, it depends on when that would have come out, but yeah, it wasn't, I think even the manga. I remember, there is a very short Gorillaz music video where there are two guys fishing with cigarettes in their mouths, and, like, Russell comes out of nowhere and, like, jumps in the river or something like that. And, like, in the UK, those cigarettes are, like, boxed out. Which is very interesting and strange. I know that, like the artist Jamie Hewlett is a chain smoker, and has often draws the characters with cigarettes and smokes and stuff like that. I think that's the thing too. That, like, if an artist, like, smokes, like, I know Toriyama is a chain smoker, and, like, he'll have other characters smoke it. But that's kind of an off topic. I don't know. I think that the sense of self, yeah, is an interesting kind of thing, because smoking is kind of seen as sort of an attitude thing, like a very, like, if someone smokes, these days, it is, in terms of, like, you know, media presentation, it's done so they can look cool, because everyone knows it's unhealthy, but, like, you know, either they don't care, or they just have so much pain that they must smoke it away. Kind of thing.
Yes, like that. And the bar.
Yeah. Like, one of the most symbolic moments of smoking was a knock on Heaven's Door when, like, Spike goes Vincent into, like, you know, detonating that bomb, and then he tries to light a cigarette, but the cigarette's, like, wet because of the rain. It's like, you don't even have the satisfaction. Like, that has always been very symbolic, but, like, beyond that, I think that, like, yeah, eating health food in terms of, especially with, in terms of the prices and stuff, and how, gosh, I was talking to a coworker earlier today about how farmers and stuff would charge more for healthier foods and organic eggs and stuff, and we do go to Whole Foods, like, once a week and stuff like that, because it's near us and we can afford it, and just how redonk everything is. It is definitely sort of a persona kind of thing, which is strange. It's similar to, like, I was also talking to my friend about the school system, and how it's whack to her how there's, like, public schools and private schools in the country, and most people go to public schools, but, like, everyone goes to public schools in Europe, but, like, but the education is much better. And private schools are sort of a thing where it's like, you know, if you couldn't make it in public school, you go to private school.
Wow.
Very, very, that's the topic for another day, but, like,
God.
Just sort of how things, I mean, I think that, like, yeah, if the idea of eating healthy is sort of, I think, I wouldn't say it's negative, but I guess it's like, I don't know, it kind of depends. Like, I guess, you know, it can be seen as sort of snobbish, or it can be seen as somebody who's, I don't know, I guess, admirable or whatever. I'm not sure, actually exactly sure how to describe it, because I guess it depends from person to person. You know, the same thing can be said about, you know, somebody who eats, or somebody who smokes, or somebody who drinks, even though it's kind of different. I don't know. They don't allow people to buy cigarettes unless they're 18. They don't allow people to buy alcohol unless they're 21. I'm not sure why those ages are what they are.
Why those are they're bad.
And why they're younger than, like, you know, people who are able to rent a car or vote.
And older than people who can go to war? Is that? Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure. How old are people who go to war, 21?
16.
16.
I think.
That's stupid.
Hey.
Yeah. Whatever. But yeah, I don't know. I think that if you were to, let's say somebody was like, okay, I'm not, you know, someone would not be swayed by eating healthy because they enjoy their freedom to eat whatever they want. That's something that they admire, and they want to posture as caring about. I shouldn't say that. That this is a presumption was made, but like, if you know, somebody who would kind of scoff at Michelle Obama's initiative to have children to eat healthier. He's like, well, you know, this is, you know, kind of, you know, draconian, and you kind of, you know, we should have the freedom to eat whatever we want. It's not that simple, because children, it's a very delicate stage for children to eat a certain way for them to, you know, to develop habits as they get older. Like,
yeah.
Seriously, you don't want them to, you know, die in their 30s from heart disease because they were told they can eat whatever they want growing up. I mean, that's I don't think any school would want to be a part of that. I think that schools are generally mindful of that. I mean, I know that they have different types of milk. They have whole milk and 2% milk. I'm guessing 2% milk is healthier. Actually, I think they read that whole milk is healthier. But you know, those are those, and also chocolate milk. But you know, there are options and stuff. Probably done for flavor more so than health options. But how often is like water made available besides? I guess water fountains.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. To kind of get back to the question, like, do you think that where we are right now is a good place in terms of proper education? Or, okay, not, I shouldn't say that. That's leading. That's leading.
What?
What needs to be done to stay on the right side of abiding by the Constitution and our personal freedom in terms of bettering the health of America? We've already had a smoking bill. And I think that, like, alcoholic consumption has kind of gone down throughout the decades. I'm not positive on that at all, but I think that's the case. But in terms of, like, you know, combating obesity, combating heart disease, and awareness of that, before we get into, like, you know, just adopting other countries' health standards and universal health care, what would you want to, if you were king for a year, what would you have done? Or what would you do in terms of, like, you know, bettering health options for America?
So I think in terms of, I think it would have to be, I think, three parts, where the first part would be a legislation. And you'd have to start small, and I think you could start small, and you would definitely target the schools. Because, again, as you were saying, like, you have to kind of develop, because I just think about how, like, in my high school, like, when we got to high school, obviously the portions for lunch just got exponentially larger, but they would just put like two handfuls of pretty hot French fries on your tray, and some people would just get French fries.
Oh yeah,
And it was like a revelation, and we just ate that for 4 years in a row. And I just think about like all the stuff that does to your brain. Like that's a good thing. And so you would have to say like, all right, at least give options and like not make the salad some weird other thing or something, and to not have two handfuls of French fries on a tray with like that weird carton of orange juice, because that goes with French fries, also chocolate milk. There was no like really convenient way to have like a water, like a cup of water for lunch. Like that would have been great. But if I wanted to like not be thirsty, I'd have to get the orange juice, which was like about a half the size of the chocolate milk. And I like chocolate milk, but not for lunch, and not as a 17-year-old, I guess. Doesn't really quench your thirst.
That's a funny thing to say. I like chocolate milk, but not for lunch.
So you would have to have options in place, but then also use the very same infrastructure of education, which is to say schools, to actually encourage students to want to use those or take those healthy options. And so just like, you know, our show is called Question If You Don't Have Answers. Usually the answer is always to just fund schools better, because we just don't. And so like, well, what's a cheap food? Two handfuls of fucking French fries. Like, I feel like that is kind of a part of this. But also like my health classes through the years were just like awful. All of my health teachers were just like strange in a very specific and different way. One year, like, one of the best health teachers we ever had was, like, also our gym teacher. Like, so clearly, like, she wasn't able to specialize in something, either health or gym. And our gym class was, like, really, it was just nothing. Like, it was sort of formless. But I guess it's gym class. But in terms of, like, I remember in high school, our health class was just so fucking weird as shit. Like, in terms of, like, it was so hard to try to learn. It was, like, you go in there and you try to not interact at all because the teacher is, like, sort of notorious as a weirdo. And, like, her thing was, like, your folders had to be organized a certain way, which is just, like, a horrible teaching standard or idea at all. But, like, that was part of it. So, like, if we had, like, a decent health class and learned anything about nutrition, then maybe we could have cared enough to have made smarter choices once we got to the cafeteria, but we just didn't have that. And I think that is itself a separate conversation in terms of, like, well, what do you need to know about this stuff in terms of, like, what we are compelled by to change our behavior specifically with regards to sugar and food and health? Because, like, I think, like, you know, to make Soylent Green a better movie, they should have appended, like, 5 minutes on the end where after Charlton Heston goes crazy and he's like, Soylent Green is people, you should just had people be like, who cares? Because that's honestly how it would work.
Yeah.
Like, we know how our iPhones are made. We know how our clothes are made. Like, we don't give a shit that it consumed people. And, like, that's how it is in America. And it doesn't have to be that way. Like, that is the lesson that we can take from that terrible place, Europe, is that Americans don't have to be this way. And we are because of capitalism.
But of course.
Three-pronged attack, though. Legislation and education in terms of funding, and then, like, the culture that produces, you know, encouraging students to give a shit.
That's a good point with health classes, because I remember the only thing I remember from health class, like, freshman year of high school, was that it was one of the easiest classes I've ever had in my life. And I don't remember what I learned. I just remember it being bloody easy. And if the classes were, like, legitimately, what you're about to have in lunch, you know, after this period when the bell rings, like 1 hour from now, is going to be made of this. These are the effects. These are what you can have if you have it once a day, or twice a week, three times a week, five times a week. And really have it kind of involve you, not in sort of a disparate, you know, sort of like, you know, distance level, but like, you know, sort of immediate everyday level that would resonate with them. And of course, I'm sure a lot of teachers are trying to figure that out, but like, you know, these are pressing issues, and I don't want to presume to outsmart teachers doing this right now. But at the same time, I know that we've not really had a topic about education, just education. I know that you have a lot of feelings on that, and I think that's one thing that they could kind of attend to better. Is that because my next question would be, if this is so generally bad for us, and this is so, you know, ultimately not contributing to our health, why is this a very easy and direct option for us? And then when their answer would be, I don't know, then, like, I would imagine, okay, well, that's just how the thing is. So I would not do anything to stop myself from eating it, basically. Like, I think generally people, there's a general understanding that, okay, yeah, fast food is bad for you, but it's one of those, you know, over time it has negative effects. Like, over time, it turned my muscle to flab, and over time, I lost all my definition. But that doesn't happen immediately. But at the same time, I mean, there are still... I mean, you and I talk about this off the air, but, like, I am disgusted by shows like my 600-pound life and stuff. And sure. I guess to a lesser extent, The Biggest Loser and stuff, because it kind of just highlights... again, like, there are no other countries in the world where people are like this. Just, you know, waddling around, and I'm not talking about, like, you know, just like you know, plus size people. Obviously,
that's another conversation that we have to have.
It is, yes, but like kind of the marketing of body types, but people who are legitimately are unhealthy enough to walk around, things that you learn when you're a baby, like that's, and you know, there's a lot of psychological issues going into that, but there's also, like, you know addictive issues because of the food and how the food industry markets certain things, and you know how you spend your money. But there are ways in which we can impede that don't solely fall on the individual. And if I were a king for a year, I would. And I know that, like, the bigger and more expensive thing, bigger things are more expensive, but like, I don't know. I think things like the nothing over 16 ounces rule, honestly, I feel that that was a step in the right direction. Maybe it was impeding on our freedoms, but like, I mean, I think the mayor at the time said that, like, you know, you can buy more than one if you want to at the same time. It's just making sure you're aware of how many things, because these giant size gulp size cups were like the equivalent of like four Coca-Cola cans.
God.
And if you take a Coca-Cola can and pour it out, it takes like 30 seconds for all that stuff to kind of come out. For all that stuff to kind of fall out. It's not a quick drink. I don't know. Like, I don't see. I don't get, you know, this whole we must fight for our freedoms if the freedom lends you to make bad decisions. Not so much gives you the option to make bad decisions and the choice to make bad decisions, but if you're more inclined to make bad decisions for yourself and by extension others, because you'll limit your productivity, you'll limit your personal energy, you won't be able to sleep well, you won't be able to get it up, you won't be able to go to the bathroom correctly, you'll have indigestion, your blood will be contaminated, you'll be more susceptible to diseases, your immunity system will be low, based on what you eat. And if you're aware of that kind of stuff and you say, well, it's my freedom to choose to do this, like, there's something wrong in the culture if that's encouraged. Mm-hmm. And I guess that's always my go-to, you know, target for my finger is the culture. Because I think at that point, we're not encouraging freedom of choice. We're encouraging willing ignorance and stupidity. Yeah. And there's nothing I hate more than that on this podcast.
Well, it's also like when people say, like, oh, it's my freedom to do this. Like, it is also a freedom that you are choosing to care about. And imagine the possibility that you don't care about that freedom. I think that is kind of – because, I mean, there are a lot of freedoms that you don't give a shit about if somebody wanted to take away your freedom to I don't know. This is America. as soon as you envisage something into being, somebody's going to start an argument about having that freedom, because that's the American culture. And, you know, I saw like a video. I didn't watch the video, but I saw the thumbnail. I think it was like a Vice video about like America brought fast food into the Middle East and introduced obesity to the Middle East. Like, that's crazy. Like, I just think that there are certain it's like flashpoints of culture and fast food that are not supposed to mix, because, you know, there are countries that have McDonald's. I think every country probably, but they're not all dealing with this problem of obesity that America does. So what is it about Europeans that they don't like? Is it about the workday? You know, is it about how people think about themselves and think about food? Like, it's all that stuff that has to be addressed.
Yes.
Plus also the thing about, like, you know, the illusion of freedoms and stuff.
That's something that my coworker brought up, is that, like, you know, people in other countries have, like, you know, month-long mandatory vacations and stuff, and our work days are crazier, and, like, you know, the culture and the food industry has kind of manufactured this sort of regulatory cycle to where we work a lot, we stay up too late, and we run ourselves ragged. So to continually fuel us, we eat bad foods, essentially.
Yeah.
That's incredibly self-destructive. Why do we do that?
Well, gosh. I mean, even today, like, I had lunch with my cousin. He came up. He's in L.A. And he was, like, yesterday, he was like, hey, you want to – I'll buy you lunch. We can catch up. And I was like, sure, man. I only have an hour for lunch, though. I don't know. It'll be a tight squeeze. And note that the mall that we ate at was, like, 5 minutes away from where I work on foot. And I was like, I don't know if I'll be able to eat lunch in an hour if I go to a restaurant. Like, but of course I am. Because that's just how America is built.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like, yeah, everything from the bottom down. I mean, there's a capitalism episode waiting that we should be doing sooner rather than later. But yeah, I don't know. I think that, like, I'm in favor of health ideal laws. Would they be slippery slopes? Would they be a fall down the fashion? The answer is no. I think so. And if we study more, like, other countries' methods in terms of, you know, kind of regulating sizes and portions and stuff, that's not, you know, that's not erasing democracy, exactly.
Right.
I invite a libertarian to kind of correct me on that, but, like, I believe that, like, if we're talking about just basic portion sizes and quality of food, that's not a slippery slope to, you know, the resurrection of Lenin or something. Yeah, as he breaks out of his glass casket.
Nice.
So yeah, we have to do better, and there's got to be a better way than this, because there's too much. I'm sick of the obvious bad thing happening because people are too lazy to think more than 2 seconds about it. and you know, that's not necessarily me saying, like, you know, and tomorrow I'm going to wake up early and run 7 miles and then eat nothing but healthy foods. I'm not suggesting exactly that, even though that would be the obvious and right thing to do for my body. But I'm saying, like, you know, this is about kind of seductive options and sort of masking what's harmful to you. And if should government get in the way of that? Maybe not. Maybe government should have nothing to do with that. But I think that, like, a morality of health should be taken upon by either people getting into the food industry, or the food industry itself should you know, better. Because I believe that, like, after Super Size Me came out, McDonald's knew it had to change something and made many more health options available. I think that's the case.
Kale.
Yeah, superfood kale. Yeah, exactly.
But Donovan, America runs on Dunkin'. How? There's nothing you can buy at Dunkin' Donuts that's going to charge you, except for, you know, caffeinated drinks and sugar donut. That's just crazy. But what was the – oh, yeah. But at the same time, like, I feel like probably where a lot of talk about health regulation falls down is that it does kind of intersect extremely poorly with ideas about body shaming and things like that. Mm-hmm. And that is something – a part of American culture and a culture itself that I haven't really reconciled. You know, there was a book, Dietland, that was adapted into a TV show this year that I neglected to watch because I think Jezebel said it wasn't that good. So I was like, well, I guess I don't know. I got the feminist pass to say I didn't have to watch it. Even though I kind of wanted to, because it's about killing men. But
you're forbidden because a reviewer said no.
Exactly. I don't, you know, I do what I'm told. But you know, like that felt like kind of like one of the first conversations. Like, I feel like that's starting to happen, like, now. As of course women are empowered to speak, we're also getting voices from different vectors of that, and one of those is you know, plus size. I don't even know the terminology for it. But you know, we have plus size models kind of coming in and out of the limelight every now and again when, I don't know, the cultural moment calls for it. But, you know, I feel like that's a conversation that isn't happening at the same time or with the same sort of consistency that, like, racial representation and gender representation are in the media. Because remember, like, that there was that moment in, like, the early to mid-2010s where an actress was on an episode of Louis called So Said the Fat Lady or something, and she had this, like, monologue that was, like, brilliant. Obviously, I think it was written by Louis C.K., but she got, like, all these great notices, and then she was going to be in a movie with Melissa McCarthy, like, the next day, and I don't even know what that actress's name is, and as far as I'm concerned, she doesn't exist. Like, she was just, like, erased out of – I mean, not, you know, maybe not aggressively, but I think we just didn't care enough about her. You know, that's hard. Like, well, I don't know what's hard, but, you know, that's a thing is you know, how we talk about American bodies and, yeah, like, health is super important. But so are various abilities, I guess, in terms of, like, ableism. And so, like, where do we kind of, like, how do we navigate these conversations? Like, I don't know. And I am not going to try to sit here and formulate the answer as one person talking into the void of my time on the debate. And now I shall hit the button and turn it back over to Donovan.
Well, that's something that I had to my brother when I was kind of mentioning this topic, is that, like, you know, body shaming and body image and the embracing of different body shapes. You know, beauty comes in all sizes, and you have, you know, like there's that conversation that if Marilyn Monroe were around today, she'd be considered a plus size model, and she's seen as one of the typical images of beauty. So, like, yeah, but I think there's clearly, I wouldn't say there's clearly a difference, but, like, as we're bringing in the idea that, like, you know, beauty comes in all different shapes and sizes, I think there still ought to be, or I think maybe even is, a recognition of what's unhealthy. Like, yeah. No one's going to be 600 pounds and consider themselves to be, like, healthy. Because once you are so big that you can't get in an elevator or even walk down a block, you know, once you're inhibited from doing very basic things, then that's your body telling you that you need to kind of straighten out. If you look a certain way and you're fully capable of whichever, like the world's strongest people are not, like, you know, they don't look like... They don't look like cut comic book figures. You know, they're big, but they don't have to be like toned. But they're still very powerful. They're in shape. They're healthy. But if somebody literally looks like, you know, X-Men's the Blob, that's a difference. So I think that is a conversation. But I think that's a conversation that's less blurry. But that's still pretty blurry, and that can be kind of, you know, brought up at a future date. And I agree with that, like, yeah, the idea of like I said, we mentioned before, in these kind of ads and advertisements for, you know, bad eating, is always like the happiest, skinniest people.
Yeah, that is kind of weird.
As they can't wait to order Olive Garden.
Oh, gee. That was the one funny line, the actual one funny line in X-Men Origins Wolverine, where he's like, you know, I got to talk to you, bub. Did you just call me Blob? What? Yeah. Oh, that was great. But yeah, in terms of if we're winding down, like, I was really excited by your pitch that, like, you know, maybe health class should just directly interact with what's going on in the cafeteria. Like, that's brilliant. Like, even just for like a how do you demarcate parts of a syllabus? I don't know, like a few sessions of class, like, that would be so cool. But like, as soon as you said that, like, it kind of immaterialized how difficult it would be to interact with the student culture, you know, even considering my own health classes, like, being so anti-teacher as a student, like, how do you talk to those kids? She was essentially just talking into the space above us, and, like, maybe the words would reach us a little bit. It like, we would listen if we had to because there was a test tomorrow, but there was no sense of, like, dialogue. And so because it's not cool to listen to your teacher, it's not cool to eat healthily. So much of media and our socializations have taught us that, you know, we learn so much before heading into school that directly opposes what school is about to do or try to do, even theoretically, that it's kind of frightening in a way. But hey, it's our freedom of education, I guess. So I think what you should do is kind of go the Bunny Colvin route. The route. I'm using King's English, or maybe. Where, you know, he was like, he couldn't just talk to any guy, or rather the college yuppie guy couldn't talk to any like low-level dealer off the street. They got to go to the middlemen. You got to talk to Bodhi, and they can talk to their people. So as a teacher, you would kind of, I don't know how you do this, but you would talk to like four kids and like convince them like one-on-one or one-on-four, like why this is important, what's going on in the cafeteria. And then like after school or before school or whatever, and then you would break your class into groups and have each one of those kids like be a kind of leader and just be like, they don't even have to do anything. They just have to be the voice that says, but you know what? I would kind of do this. Cause I think that's very important. Cause again, it's peer pressure. Like, your thoughts are kind of controlled in a sense or rather that is, again, a vector of socialization is peer pressure. And I'm so thankful that my friends were losers like I was. I didn't have any peer pressure. I'm not addicted to alcohol or cigarettes or drugs or anything like that. And sure, like the cost was like having any kind of like, you know, profile, but that was never something that I genuinely valued until I got to college and realized that I never beep. That's just too sad. That's too sad. but yeah, so I don't know. If we are winding down anyway, or if we're not, but what's the next point?
I mean, I think that like this has been a solid kind of overall coverage of this idea. I think I'll kind of say my opinion is that like I'm not saying that like you know, fast food should be banned or you know or whichever, but I think primarily, education should be intensified, and maybe things like, you know, like no, nothing over 16 ounces should be regulated or whatever, because it's just crazy. Like, we just had the Trenta sizes for teas and refreshers at the cafe, and I just cried.
what?
Because it's you have tall, which is for some reason small, grande, uh-huh, which is medium, and venti, which is large, and then Trenta, which is like, I guess, extra large.
And you have Ariana Grande, which you can't even see.
Yeah, it's the size of Galactus. Mm-hmm. And it's just, I mean, we literally don't know how to, because this involves like shakers and stuff. So there's kind of, you know, sort of equations with the water and the tea and the ice. We don't know how to make the extra size Trentas because those are too big.
They don't
fit in the shakers. So, like, whatever.
I hate that you have to prepare drinks at your bookselling job.
I do too.
Hey, Donovan, what's the tea? Oh.
Man. I'd rather be selling anything. But I don't know. It's one of those things where it's just like, this is a topic I feel like we can come back to. Maybe we even have some guests on, because I know that like people feel strongly about this, but I think that like no one is not in favor of bettering the countrywide health. It's just, you know, the kind of personal freedoms and how they kind of dictate that.
So, everybody else's health.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know. But yeah, I thought this is kind of interesting. I think that like, because no one's really talking about this right now. I think that like when it's brought up, it is sort of done in that sort of, you know, NRA gun control style, you know, I don't want to impede on what I enjoy. But yeah, I don't think it takes too long to kind of come out the other way of like, maybe health is a good idea. Not that that requires a ruination of the fast food industry, but I suppose maybe sort of a limiting in a ways. And if that's too radical, then we'll work it out. We always do, I think.
Abolish drive-thrus. As a wise man, Joel White, once said, there is no medium-sized drink in fast food establishments, because I mean, I'm pretty sure it begins at medium at McDonald's. I think it's like kitty and then medium. Like, that's not.
You might be right.
That's not how sizes work. Was this Sesame Street? Like, one of these things is not like the other.
Oh, dear.
Oh, God. And also, I think like when you go to other countries and you order a large soda, it's like a thimble. It's like, what the fuck is this, dude? This doesn't even have two handfuls of sugar inside of it.
Exactly. What are you doing to me? I mean, it's just so sad to see like your commercials, like, you know, when you're over at so and so, buy an extra large drink. Like, there was a thing that like I remember when John Stewart talked about, we're like, go to Olive Garden, buy an entree, and then like get a second entree to take home.
It's like you're worried you're gonna be hungry on your way home from dinner. It's like, that's a great rip.
That's insane. That's diseased.
Yes, you got to put in that audio. That's such a great one.
Oh yeah. I got plenty of fun stuff.
As many of us know, the typical American diet is rich in essential poisons. As evidence mounts that Big Agra and the food lobby have turned our food supply into an addictive, fattening death menu of artificial chemicals, antibiotics, and Cool Ranch carcinogens. The question is, now that we have this knowledge, now that the American people are aware of this, what are food companies going to do about it?
Little Caesars created the new bacon-wrapped deep dish pizza topped with pepperoni and bacon and wrapped in over 3.5 feet of bacon.
It appears they're going to say, F*** you anyway. Screw your health study. Little Caesars will wrap that study in bacon, batter it, deep fry it, and feed it through your anus with a 32-ounce soda. The last part is if you have the coupon. The I don't give a approach is getting a lot of traction in the fast food community.
What could be better than Golden Corral's piping hot and delicious yeast rolls? How about 6 free yeast rolls to take home? Cotton Candy and the Chocolate Wonderfall, both part of our Endless Buffet.
Every round of Friday's Endless Apps can be a different Endless App.
Olive Garden's new buy one, take one. Go for dinner tonight and take home a second entree for later.
Later? You went there for dinner. Are you worried you'll get lightheaded? Unless you have a spare dinner for the ride home? Which Olive Garden are you going to? You can choose one that's close to you. And isn't such a far drive, you need a second dinner. There's almost as many Olive Gardens as there are Starbucks. Idea for a business. Combo pasta and coffee chain restaurant. Olive Bucks. Featured menu item, the Venti Rosemary Mocha Alfredo. 3,000 calories of, oh my God.
But before we leave, we do have emails.
What?
Oh, yeah. Hell, I just got the notifications for these. We have two emails.
Two?
Yes.
God, we know how to spread them out over the year. We should read the second one when I pay my second car insurance bill.
Yes. So I can read one and you can read one.
Okie dokie.
Okay. The first email is from Tom Paneris, titled "Urge Tolerating Trump Episode, parentheses, Urge to Kill Rising."
Oh.
And Tom writes, "Hey, guys. I just finished your episode where you questioned why we tolerate Trump, and I wanted to write in with some thoughts. I promise to be as brief as possible because I honestly could write volumes about this topic, all of which would end with a rant similar to, fuck this guy, fuck that guy, one you guys had a couple of episodes ago." Which one was that?
James Gunn.
Yeah, right. Anyway, my wife and I were talking about evangelical Christians recently and the ways in which they seem to be twisting themselves into compromising the supposed family values, quote-unquote, and other morally superior positions they say they have so they will vote in support of Trump. I was raised in a more conservative branch of Lutheran Church. Lutheran Church. But beyond attending weddings and funerals, haven't set foot in a church in probably 15 years. So I don't know how authoritative I can be on the topic. But I loathe what evangelical Christianity has done to religion and politics in our country. I think it was Harrison who jokingly used the phrase, "not all Christians," in the episode, and I laughed along with it. Sorry?
I would never.
That's not your character. And I laughed along with it but what I want to know is if what has become the face of American Christianity doesn't represent all American Christians, then where are the people who disagree with this and why aren't they making more noise? Am I missing something in the media or do I not see stories about congregations denouncing this government and its party as often as I see Jerry fucking Falwell and his fake ass Christian university kissing Trump in the GOP's ass? Language, Thomas. I will say that, like, and I think this was maybe after we did the episode, I think, I did see an article or two of certain chumps, or certain churches denouncing Donald Trump and saying, we Christians do not represent this guy because he's obviously not a Christian and he's bad for the country. So, I don't want to have our episode give the impression that, like, 0% of Christians have denounced him, or 0% churches have denounced him, but, That is not what you're seeing on news channels right now, and it is just a continuing shame. Tom continues, "My wife boiled it down to the fact that evangelical Christianity has been the perfect mask for bigotry in our country, especially during our lifetimes. For context, we're both 41, so we are at the very beginning of post-Watergate, post-Vietnam War generation. It's easy to be misogynistic, homophobic, transphobic, racist, etc., when you can nail yourself to the cross and say that your way of thinking in life is actually one that's being persecuted. This is a point you guys made very well, and I think that if you look at conservative white women voters, for instance, they buy into this whole idea. Somehow they have been convinced that their husbands have the intellectual high ground and that anything and vote as a household. Or they don't vote at all because their husbands are voting for the opposite candidate, so they don't see the point because we, quote-unquote, we cancel each other out. There is so much white privilege here that, well, that's a separate conversation that I'm actually qualified to conduct because I grew up in a community that is the very definition of white privilege. But this is already getting to be too long. So 3 points. Number one, let them rant about Hillary and don't react. The GOP has had the Hillary Clinton narrative down since the day she campaigned alongside her husband in 1992. It wasn't going to be the happy housewife first lady. They'll never change their tune on that, and she will forever be their Goldstein, even after she formally retires or passes away. I can say that. Number two, I'll keep this brief, but I find that I get my hackles up with my fellow liberals, usually on social media, as much as I do with Trump supporters. I may not say much, but there are so many ways the left tries to eat itself that I think it actually affects our ability to win elections. The GOP has always been very good at getting its people to fall in line when the chips are down. Meanwhile, you have liberal voters in swing states voting for Jill Stein and calling out other liberals on Twitter because, oh, I don't know, some sort of nebulous purity test wasn't passed. Again, this is a whole other conversation.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Yeah, yeah. Do you have any thoughts on that or other, the first point?
No, not right now.
Yeah, no, yeah, I would agree as well. Number three, I don't know if Democratic voters are tolerating Trump as much as that they are trying to settle in and be patient so they can play the long game. I see a lot of focus on local and state elections from the DNC in a way that I haven't in a number of years. One of the greatest moves the GOP ever made was getting more of their people elected to school boards, county boards, city governments, and state legislators. And they did this over the course of decades. If we want to slide the country back to the center and even further left, we have to look beyond just the next presidential election cycle and challenge people in those very unsexy local and state elections. We also have to be mindful of the concept of, quote, short-term losses for long-term gains, quote. I don't think that the GOP is a dying entity, but I will say that so many of them are obsessed with winning and holding these short-term victories over everyone's heads that they make themselves vulnerable. Interesting. And finally, you aren't being ageist when you rail against old people. Thank you. My parents' generation has messed this country up considerably, and it's going to take years to get it back. So fuck the baby boomers. I'm sorry for the lengthy email. I hope it made sense. Feel free to read as much or as little of this as you want. As always, you guys have a great show, and I really enjoy listening. Thank you very much, Tom.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you very much. No, believe me, we've had crazy long emails on the Next Dimension that I actually had to cut down. So, like, this is perfect length, I thought. Is there anything you want to say about his email?
Yeah, I mean, I totally feel him in terms of point number two here. Like, I can never know if the tide is going to be for or against any given Democratic senator like Kamala Harris or anybody like that, like, or even somebody like Joy Reid. Like, remember that? Mm-hmm. Like, people dug up like her homophobic comments from years and years ago. Like, and she recovered from that, thankfully, because it's like, how about we just give black women a pass like forever? Like, I mean, that was always my argument about trans people back in the day. Like, I just feel like at some point, we were all American once. But yeah, like that's definitely like, that is so frustrating that like, there's all like just that liberal posturing that just makes it impossible for unity to be a thing. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, it's the fucking the creep of the libertarians that are always coming in and being like, but I can promise you the moon. And suddenly the moon is interesting when Hillary is another politician. Like, I get that. But yeah, I mean, you got to think long term for sure. And all that stuff.
Yeah, I'm really hoping that that's larger of the conversation as we go forward, because like, you know, Jill Stein was a joke vote. Like, she was never, like,
yeah.
And like, and you know, maybe there's a topically in the future about the whole Bernie situation and the cult of personality that was. But that's kind of all he came out to be. And like, I hear things now about, you know, he should run next time or whatever. But like, I mean, he realistically speaking, in the realm where Donald Trump was not elected president because he was a joke, like Bernie Sanders was. Not as much of a joke, but like, he was not highly likely to win, I think. Just in terms of like skeletons in his closet and, you know, sort of like they're kind of the radical nature of him. Whether he had good ideas or not, like, you know, in terms of like, you know, your average politicians, I think that he was probably our version of Trump in that way, in terms of conservatives and stuff. So, but again, that's another topic that I'm taking us into. So moving on, our second and last email for tonight is by Michael Rich, who titles his email, Why? To quote Kel Mitchell.
Yeah. So Michael says, Don and Harry, I am still trying to understand how Mr. Trump ended up as our president. It doesn't make sense to me when he has strong support from only a minority of the voters. However, there are a few things that have become clear. The Republican Party controlled the last redistricting of the majority of states. Both parties try to design districts where they have the best chance of winning elections for representatives. Control of the House gives the party advantages in deciding what will be discussed and voted on. The Republican House of Representatives tried very hard to help the president appear to keep campaign promises. The Republican control of the state governments also allowed them to push forward an agenda of limiting the franchise. While courts have struck down the worst of these efforts, the process of voting has been made harder for the old, the young, the poor, the displaced, and by addition, the blacks. as they're called. Neo-Nazis, white supremacists, and out-and-out racists express support for the president, and he doesn't disown them. That doesn't mean that all his supporters are racist, but it appears that he wants to keep the support of his of this small and extreme group. Quote, Make America Great Again appeals to the blue-collar children of the baby boomers, mostly between 35 and 55. Ooh, so I guess Tom would be considered a baby boomer. They think that the country can go back to the days of good union jobs in coal mines, auto plants, steel mills, etc. Their parents had that in the post-World War II boom. Candidate Trump chose to appeal to this group of people by promising to make better deals with the rest of the world. The speeches were vague, and people put in their own personal dreams. Mm-hmm. Both Republicans and Democrats have failed this group for a generation, so they were ready for someone outside the tried and recycled slate that the Republicans offered, or Hillary, who has been part of the political limelight since the 80s and thought it was her turn to win. Bernie and Trump got the dissatisfied voters who are ready to give a big finger to the party. These Republicans continue with the president because he makes party politicians uncomfortable and gets the media to whine about being cut off from power. They think his excesses are partly done just to stick a finger in the eye of the establishment. Rich and greedy are getting what they want. Fewer taxes, fewer rulers to protect, fewer rules to protect the public from their rapaciousness, fewer penalties for breaking the rules that remain. The stock market is up. Everything must be getting better. I wouldn't think that racists, rich people, and guys with nothing left to lose would be enough to elect a president, so I'm still looking for the reason behind the 2016 election. Russians.
Yeah, the Ruskies. Well, it's interesting because, like, as of today, there was an op-ed in the New York Times where a senior staff member of the Trump administration has anonymously posted an article saying that we know exactly how insane this timeline in the darkest timeline is, and there is a faction within the Trump administration who are working to keep him from making the craziest things happen and keep him from indulging in his craziest fantasies. And this has come a day after there was a big news blow-up of Bob Woodward. Woodward's book, Fear, coming out next week, in which a lot of people inside the White House have, you know, been vocalizing how nutso this administration is, which is actually kind of very, very funny. Like, snatching things off his desk so he won't start World War III. It's like, Jesus Jones. I guess it's a constant sentence joke, but, like, I think that, like, I think that this whole, I was about to say that, like, this whole Trump sort of, you know, era has been sort of an experiment in trying these new things, because this narrative of, you know, we need to shake up Washington and, you know, have something new pop in, I never heard of this until the 2016 election. Like, no one was really talking about this with Barack Obama, because I think we were distracted with like, police shootings and LGBT marriage laws and universal health care. I don't really remember the idea that Obama was, like, you know, this sort of, you know, cliched president. In some ways he was, but, like, I don't remember that being the narrative of,
like, a Mr. Smith goes to Washington kind of thing.
Yeah. It felt like that was kind of created with Trump just running and throwing out these, you know, madman ideas that, like, that narrative was created by his supporters. It was never a narrative that was in search of a hero. Or maybe it was, but, like, it was never, I feel it had not been born. Well, first of all, it's also very cliche. But also, like, it kind of was rebirthed with Trump. I don't really find, you know, because, like, it's I don't know. Like, we had this episode. I don't get into it. But I thought that was a very, very good email. Do you have any thoughts on this?
I would also agree. It's a very, really good email. It's always good to kind of, like, lay out, you know, the reasons for things and the rationales to make sense of it. Even though it like, I always worry with this podcast that we may strike a sort of odd tone of, like, this, like, why are things happening the way they are? Because that's just not where our heads are at a lot of the times. We're always trying to catch up.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, something like this is really good to just kind of, like, lay it all out. Like, say, you know, to kind of make that interesting comparison between Bernie and Trump in terms of anti-establishment candidates. And, like, why was that so attractive? And a lot of it was just because of generational issues that were not always clear to millennial voters, or just millennial family members of these voting baby boomers. Like, they wanted somebody like this because of what he meant. And maybe they were just like, I'll just roll the dice with this guy. Like, sure, obviously there could be a better candidate. Like, anybody would be a better candidate for president than this guy, but he's the only one. Like, when's the next time we're going to have somebody who's going to talk about this stuff? You know, all those dreams about what America should be, which is like all the cliches about, like, you know, coal miners. And, like, you know, let's get Motown back going, and, like, you know, the auto industry kind of collapsing in Detroit. Like, I don't know. That's, you know, the blue collar America is blank X Mad Libs. Like, I don't know enough about it to say, but obviously I think it has been sort of mythologized to an extent that it is this sort of crisis that needed to be addressed. And of course, Trump is not quite doing that in terms of the deals he makes with other countries and in terms of being taken for a rube and just getting walked all over by other nations. That's fine. Or just cutting himself off completely. But yeah, I don't necessarily want to litigate the 2016 election for a millionth time. I did actually want to go back a little bit to Tom's email, because we didn't really follow up on the evangelical Christian part, but I just in terms of, I saw something on Twitter today that was like, in response to the Nike quote unquote boycott, which is just the destruction of personal property. it was like, you people will boycott a company because it has a black man in it, but y'all won't even like stop going to church, even though Catholic priests rape like thousands of children. Yeah, that's interesting. It's interesting what people choose to be upset about sometimes, because sometimes perhaps outrage is a choice, which is, we talk about outrage a lot in this show, and it's interesting that our minds always go there, but I think that there's just a lot of unanswered questions and ideas to kind of be hashed out about outrage and the weaponization of feelings and the mob, or rather our psychological tendencies to form mobs, and how you can use that to decentralize power further from big corporations and politics and all that stuff. So, interesting. You know, this is just a taste of things to come on Questions We Don't Have Answers. All of these questions and more for your listenership pleasure.
I know, right? Well, I think it's like outrage is always meant to be saved as, you know, for the really important things, and when it's sort of normalized, even in instances where there should be a conversation, it's like, you know, where it leads itself to, like, you know, self cannibalism and distractions. But yeah, we do talk about like every episode, all the episodes. So if you want to continue talking about outrage or any other topics, feel free to email at qnoanswers@gmail.com. Like us on Facebook, like us on Twitter. Follow myself, Dono DMG1 on Twitter. Follow Harry at, is it Harrison Chute on Twitter?
Yeah, I try to keep it simple. And next week, hopefully, you never know with us, we're going to talk about celebrities again. Hold your applause, please. I know this is novel for us, but we're going to talk about celebrity hatred this time, and the nature of that, the disgusting, aggressive ways people hate on people who probably do deserve some hate. But what is that doing to us as Americans? This is like the fast food of media consumption, is the Kardashians, of course. And, you know, what is that doing to the colons of our brain? And so next week, pop hatred, the Zuck, the Musk, can't even fucking say it, the Kardashians are firing upon Deep Space Nine. Donovan, play us out.
So, until the next episode, make sure you vote.
Oh, God.
For everything. And we'll see you then.
Mountain Dew is people.
Why don't you just let go and quiet down your ego? Don't complain about finance. I know your daddy weren't a real man. Go ahead and live your dreams. To me, you're stronger than a whole team. I know you can't relax, and you don't want me to know that. I see you work real hard. You wanna help your friends, but trust me, baby, you don't owe them. Don't take on people's problems. I wanna see you smile, even when you think I'm angry. It's true, it might take a while, but it's between you and me.